if it were to have happened in our day, it would have been covered by throngs of media. They would have broadcast from on location. You can almost hear Lester Holt of NBC News covering it this way. The conference site is shrouded in thick, dark clouds, an ominous presence, really. The thunder and lightning are constant and the earthquakes frequent. The meeting is being referred to unofficially as the Sinai Summit. The conference is being held in a secluded desert hideaway at the peak of a mountain. The sessions are highly secret and top level. The security is extremely tight. A barrier surrounds the perimeter of the mountain, and crossing it is said to bring certain death. The conference convened weeks before. The general feeling of the mass of people awaiting the results of the conference outside is one of fearful awe mixed with excited anticipation. They have seen their leader twice since the meetings began, and then they received only sketchy reports. We don't have anything definite to report at this time. Word among the local Hebrew nomads encamped here is that their leader, Egyptian fugitive Moses, is in high-level negotiations with the deity they call Yahweh. However, our analysts seriously doubt the authenticity of these reports. No one has ever seen this God. Aaron, brother of Moses, religious leader and spokesman for the Hebrew tribes, has told us that the issues on the table to be resolved are of global proportion. The results of the meeting can mean either long-term security and communal well-being or the decay and eventual destruction of an entire nation. Wait a minute. We are receiving reports that the mysterious and elusive statesman Moses is emerging from the thick clouds of the mountain. Witnesses at the scene say that his face is glowing with an almost piercing glow. And he appears to be carrying two rather large objects. We would love to be bringing you live coverage, but the unusual weather phenomenon at the mountain are interfering with our transmission. However, this event did not take place in our own day, and thankfully there was no media there to cover it. Heaven knows they would have gotten it wrong. The only records we have of this event are, well, the participants themselves, right? The words of God and Moses. Exodus 19 sets the scene this way. On the morning of the third day, there was thunder and lightning and a thick cloud over the mountain and a very loud trumpet blast. Everyone in the camp trembled. Then Moses led the people out of the camp to meet with God. And they stood at the foot of the mountain. Mount Sinai was covered with smoke because the Lord descended on it in a fire. The smoke billowed up from it like smoke from a furnace, and the whole mountain trembled violently. As the sound of the trumpet grew louder and louder, Moses spoke, and the voice of God answered him. And by the time we get to Exodus chapter 20, we discover that it isn't from two tablets of stone that the Israelites first hear the Ten Commandments, but it is from the voice of God himself. Chapter 20, verse 1 reads, "And God spoke all these words. I am the Lord your God who brought you out of the land of Egypt, out of the land of slavery." And so begins the most influential law code that has ever been written, the Ten Commandments. I mean, this is one of the most momentous events in history, second to events like, well, creation, the birth of Christ, the death of Jesus, and his resurrection. But what does it mean for us, right? What do the Ten Commandments mean for you today? Perhaps you have a mental image of Charlton Heston in an epic Hollywood rendition. Maybe you see them as something that you had to memorize as a kid in Sunday school. Or for you, they are simpler rules for simpler times. Or maybe you see them as stifling an outdated list of strict demands. Well, it's my hope and my prayer that by the end of this series, if not already, that you will see the Ten Commandments as life-giving words of grace that lead to fulfillment and freedom. Right? These are 10 timeless truths that are essential to life and society. Right? And now, if you already have a deep appreciation for the Ten Commandments, then this study will be a refreshing reminder of God's love and provision. But if not, I hope you will gain love for the tremendous gift that God gave the Jewish nation 4,000 years ago, and indeed to all of civilization. Right? We have much we can learn from the Ten Commandments today. Our society has turned its back on these timeless truths, and yet they are the very foundation of our civilization. But we have banned them in our schools, eradicated them from our courts. We've hushed them in our legislatures. And yet James Madison, one of our nation's founding fathers, chief architect of the Constitution and two-term president, said this about the Constitution: "We have staked the whole future of American civilization not on the power of government, far from it. We have staked the future of all of our political institutions upon the capacity of mankind for self-government, upon the capacity of each and all of us to govern ourselves, to control ourselves, and to sustain ourselves according to the Ten Commandments of God." And yet today, some 235 years after Madison spoke those words, right, 25% of Americans can tell you that the Big Mac contains 2 all-beef patties, special sauce, lettuce, cheese, pickles, and onion on a sesame seed bun, right? But only 14% can name the Ten Commandments. Only 49% of Christians can even list 4 of the Ten Commandments. And yet polls also show that 78% of Americans are in favor of their public display. So obviously there is some kind of disconnect going on. Now next week, I'll begin to look at each one of the commandments individually, but today there are 3 things that we need to see about all of the Ten Commandments in general. And the first is this: the Ten Commandments are timeless. The Ten Commandments are timeless. Right? They express eternal principles that are always relevant to our lives, right? At the bottom of the stone tablet that Moses brought down, engraved on that tablet, was not an expiration date. Now, many critics today will tell us that the Ten Commandments are antiquated and outmoded. They are no longer suited to life in modern times. They are designed for a primitive people. However, we are scientific, we are educated, we are technologically advanced, and so the Ten Commandments are beneath us. Nothing could be further from the truth. All right, just look at the problems plaguing our culture, right? A reckless disregard for life, rape culture, widespread divorce, rampant sexual promiscuity, rebellious youth, high crime, lack of integrity from the corporate boardroom to Capitol Hill. And you quickly can see that the Ten Commandments are as relevant right now as they have ever been. Far from being shackles of our past that we need to leave behind, the Ten Commandments are the timeless cure, right? The exact medicine we need. We are facing, as a society, a crisis of character. A serious property crime occurs every 4.1 seconds. A violent crime every 24.6 seconds. A rape every 3.9 minutes. A murder every 30 minutes. According to Forbes magazine, as of April 16th, we have averaged more than 1 mass shooting per day this year. And that's defined as 4 or more people having been shot or killed, not including the killer. The solution, right, is not anything proposed by President Biden in his address last week. No matter how you might feel about those proposals and policies. And the problem goes much deeper than mere statistics can close. I mean, how common is it for us to fudge a little bit on our taxes, to put a little extra padding in our resumes? And we see nothing wrong at all with you know, working ourselves into an early grave to accumulate more earthly wealth and prestige. In fact, our culture sees this as a virtue. Meanwhile, our families, our spouses and children suffer. And then office affairs and Facebook flings are the norm. Our marriages and families are falling apart. Did you know that the majority of high school graduates today do not expect to be married to one person their whole lives? No, we have not evolved beyond these timeless truths. And it is very clear that if our nation is going to survive, let alone thrive into the future, that we're going to have to look to the past, to these tremendous guidelines given by God himself. I love the words of the great Scottish preacher of the 19th century, Alexander MacLaren. Here's what he says. An obscure tribe of Egyptian slaves plunges into the desert to hide from pursuit and emerges after 40 years with a code gathered into 10 words so brief, so complete, and so intertwining morality and religion, so free from local or national peculiarities, so close fitting to fundamental duties that it is today, after more than 3,000 years, authoritative in the most enlightened peoples. The voice that spoke from Sinai reverberates in all lands. The old world had other lawgivers who professed to formulate their precepts by divine inspiration, and they are all fallen silent. But this voice, like a trumpet on that day, waxes louder and louder as the years roll. Whose voice was it? Well, the only answer explaining the supreme purity of the commandments and their immortal freshness is found in the first sentence of the paragraph, God spoke all these words. Now, another question we need to answer when we talk about the timeless quality of the Ten Commandments is this. Are we as Christians still under the law? And the answer to this is a paradoxical well, yes and no. Right? Now, the Ten Commandments are a part of the Old Covenant. And we are told explicitly in the New Testament that we are no longer under the Old Covenant, but under the New Covenant of grace. Paul writes in Romans and Galatians that we as Christians are not under the law. And so the fact is that as Christians, in a technical or legal sense, we're not under the authority of the Old Testament law. But that doesn't mean that, well, we can ignore the Ten Commandments, we can take them, we can chuck them to the side because they don't matter anymore. Because the Ten Commandments themselves are reflective of timeless, unchanging truths that are as valid today as they have ever been. And they reveal to us the holy nature of God, his moral purity. You see, the character of God is unchanging in nature. He is the same yesterday, today, and forever. God's nature's not changed. His moral standards haven't been amended. Rather, in the New Testament, Paul writes in Romans 7, 12 through 13, that the law is holy, righteous, and good. He says in Romans 8, 4, that when we as Christians walk by the Spirit, that the law is fulfilled in us. So the reality is that God took us from the old covenant to the new covenant so that we could actually live out these standards. In fact, 9 out of the 10 commandments are repeated in some form in the new covenant. In fact, often they are heightened. In a very real sense, the 10 commandments are timeless in nature, and they still have something very important to teach us. Now, number two, the second thing that we need to understand about the Ten Commandments is their serious nature. The Ten Commandments are serious. When God gave Israel these words, he wasn't just offering them friendly advice. These weren't just options in a moral multiple choice, but they were solemn commands given with tremendous significance. There's nothing here to take lightly. I don't think this has ever been said better than by newscaster Ted Koppel years ago at a graduation address at Duke University. Listen to this. We have actually convinced ourselves that slogans will save us. Shoot up if you want, but use a clean needle. Enjoy sex whenever and with whomever you wish, but wear a condom. No, the answer is no. Not because it isn't cool or smart or because you might end up in jail or dying of AIDS in an AIDS ward, but no, because it is wrong. Because we have spent 5,000 years as a race of rational human beings trying to drag ourselves out of the primeval slime by searching for truth and moral absolutes. Our society finds truth too strong a medicine to digest undiluted. In its purest form, truth is not a polite tap on the shoulder. It is a howling reproach. What Moses brought down from Mount Sinai were not the 10 suggestions. They are commandments, are, not were. The sheer brilliance of the 10 commandments is that they codify in a handful of words acceptable human behavior. Not just for then or now, but for all time. And yet today we brush these commands aside with little thought. We water them down, make them much more convenient. It's been suggested that our Ten Commandments today might read something like this. Honor your father and mother as long as they support whatever you want to do. You shall not murder unless you've been provoked to great anger. You shall not commit adultery unless you're deeply in love or you're not feeling it anymore. You shall not steal much. You shall not bear false witness unless you're in a jam. However, it was God's intention that these commandments be taken seriously, and that they would weigh heavily on the hearts and minds of those who heard them. If you take a close look at the scene around Mount Sinai, you can see that God took every step to ensure that these commands were taken with the utmost seriousness. First of all, the Ten Commandments were not given until extensive preparations had been made. At the beginning of Exodus 19, God gives Israel a solemn charge, and he tells them to ready themselves, right? And they had to go through cleansing rituals before receiving the law. And this impressed upon them the serious nature of what's happening. They were to wash all of their clothes. They were to abstain from sex. Now, secondly, God had them build a barrier around the mountain, this kind of line of demarcation. And they were told not to cross it, you know, because it marked the presence and the holiness of God. And if someone did cross this barricade, they were to have been stoned or shot through with arrows. All right, that's how seriously God took this. And then there was the awesome presence of God himself. I mean, the giving of the law in Sinai was accompanied by smoke and fire and thunder and lightning, and the mountain itself quaked at the presence of God. And the sight was so fearsome that scripture tells us the people trembled. And when God first spoke the Ten Commandments, his voice could be heard by everyone. And it was so powerful and so piercing that the people begged and pleaded with Moses to let God speak only to him, and that Moses would relay the message, because they were afraid that they would die if they kept hearing the voice of God. It's pretty incredible. But it's clear that God wanted them to take this seriously. Unfortunately, they quickly forgot. And so do we, right? let us not treat God's standards lightly, but take them seriously. Let us not just see the words, but let us see the holy God who spoke them. All right, number three, one of the most important things we need to see about the Ten Commandments is their positive nature, because the commandments are positive. Now, since most of them begin with "you shall not," we tend to see them as restrictive, as limiting, as, well, negative. But for every negative command, there is a positive counterpart. And the intention of the Ten Commandments was not to restrict or stifle us, but God, in his love, was trying to protect and provide for us. He is not a cosmic cop who is out there trying to bust Israel for having a good time. Each commandment is a gift of grace, and God gave them for our protection and provision. Each commandment either protects us from something that would destroy us, or it shows us the way to something that will fulfill us. Don't forget the overall scene here, right? Israel has just been liberated from slavery. They are now a free people and an independent nation. They are on their way to the promised land, where they will build their nation and grow as a people. But before this can happen, God brings them to Sinai and gives them these Ten Commandments. And these commandments have to be seen against this backdrop of freedom, right? They don't stifle freedom. They don't limit our fulfillment. Rather, they are the key to it. These words form the foundation of a free and stable society. They are the key to their identity as a people. And God saw these commands as being necessary for them to be a free and civilized nation. Now, humanity has built many civilizations with many different moral codes. And yet the Ten Commandments stand unparalleled in their precision and their clarity. And in these few words are sufficient moral principles to govern an entire nation. Now, our country today has millions upon millions of pages of laws and rules and codes and regulations and policies, right? And we are unraveling at an unmanageable pace. And yet, when these simple Ten Commandments are followed by a people, they are the strongest of cultures. I think part of the genius of the Ten Commandments is that they bring into a single focus our two greatest duties, all right? Our duty to God and our duty to our fellow man, right? If you look at the commandments, you'll notice that the first four have to do with our duty to God, and then the second six have to do with our duty to each other, our fellow man. And remember what Jesus said about the greatest commandments, that the greatest commandment is to love God with all of your heart, with all of your soul, with all of your mind, and with all of your strength. And then he says the second is like it, to love your neighbor as yourself, all right? Love God and love others, right? That's the heart of the Ten Commandments. That's the two parts of the Ten Commandments. Love God and love others. Now, one of the mistakes we've made is, well, we can figure out the loving others part, but this religious stuff, this love God stuff, this duty to God, we don't need that. But these two halves go together. Right? They cannot be separated, all right? And they're combined here, and you'll see that our duty to God must come first. If we're not in a right relationship with God, we will not be in a right relationship with people, right? Part of our problem today is that we want to be able to treat each other right, but leave God out of the equation. And we have people killing and raping and robbing each other. And the problem isn't that they don't love their fellow man enough. The problem is that they don't love God enough, right? There is no respect, fear, or love of God. And if a nation has no love for God, then no amount of laws regulating human behavior will ever be enough. And the further we get from God, the more laws we will need. Journalist and author David Aikman spoke of a conversation that he once had with former Russian President Boris Yeltsin. Here's what he says. Yeltsin told me in an interview that he was thinking of ways to get priests into the Russian school system to speak on ethics and morality, which prompted me to observe that it took the United States 200 years of religious freedom to drive Christianity out of the schools and the Soviet Union 70 years of atheism to bring it back. So these commandments really are a gift. And woven into these 10 words is the key to a free and civilized society. All right. And in following them, you have a right relationship with God and a right relationship with your family and a right relationship with your neighbor. These aren't things to do away with. They are something for us to embrace. They are the key to life and happiness. Thank you, and God bless.